Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Welcome to Closing Bell. I'm Scott Wapner, live from Post 9 here at the New York Stock Exchange. This make or break hour begins with stocks on edge as interest rates continue to move higher. We're going to ask our experts over this final stretch what the breaking point for investors might be. Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan coming up in just a bit. He's going to weigh in on that question, obviously. In the meantime, take a look at your scorecard with 60 minutes to go in regulation. Not much steam at all behind the major averages today with that backup in yields. The 10-year moving closer to 470 today. We've got our eye on that over the final stretch. And Fed Chair Powell speaking within the past couple of hours. Our Steve Leisman joining us shortly with the most important takeaways for investors. Oil down again, gold higher, so we're watching commodities too, and the dollar. There's been some buying in big cap tech today. Nvidia, Microsoft, there you go, and Meta are all staying green in this session. A nice bounce for AMD as well as we watch some of those chip names, better than 2% there. And some big names working on some big time losing streaks. How about Boeing? It's been down for 11 straight days trying to break that streak, six in a row. For Berkshire Hathaway, don't hear that all that often. And Home Depot and IBM, they've been off for the past five straight. So we'll watch that, try and end some streaks or continue them over this final stretch. It does take us to our talk of the tape, the road ahead for stocks, and whether some bigger potholes are now lurking. Let's ask Adam Parker. He's the founder and CEO of Trivariate Research and a CNBC contributor back with me at Post 9. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you.
So, man, you've been bullish, right? You've been laying out your case for higher margins, higher stocks. Things look pretty good. Are you rethinking that now?
No, not really.
Higher rates, I mean, don't do that for you?
I think when you're in this band, good news is good and bad is bad. If it gets too hot, the economy, then I could see us getting back to that, too good, it's running too hot, they're going to cut. They're going to suspend cutting, maybe even hike.
And
you got
there?
The last 48 hours, you got a little bit of that, but I think it's fits and starts. It's not, you know, the conclusion isn't in. I think it's mixed. Look, the housing data was light. Retail sales was strong. It's mixed. It's like the weather. It's 80, and then it's going to be 50. I don't see it as a clear.
That's annoying, right?
Clear, yeah.
You just make up your mind. Weather.
Make up your mind. So I think that we're getting that sort of inconsistent data right now in the economy. I don't think it's enough to make them start hiking rates. I think it's just delaying. Remember, what were these guys at? Seven cuts at the beginning of the year, which we all thought was a little bit, equity guys thought was kind of ridiculous. So, look, maybe we're in that band where it's to the upper end. If we get run a hot, the people will freak out. But right now, I think the economy's still okay.
I feel like the Fed isn't changing like the weather, though. It's like cloudy with a side of higher for longer. Now we're trying to figure out what that's going to mean for stocks.
Which I'm good with. I think earnings so far, you know, we have, 200 companies reporting in the next 10 earnings sessions in the S&P 500. There's a lot in front of us. We got the financials mostly behind us, and we got the big next couple of weeks. But I haven't seen what I would call a bellwether tell me demand's bad or, you know, the outlook is being reduced materially, you know, a big company. So we'll see if we get that. But so far, I think earnings season's been okay.
We were due anyway for some kind of a correction.
You don't
get
top left, you know, bottom left, top right, you know, it's not a God-given right to happen every day. So, yeah, you can get little retrenchments. People worry about maybe a little bit less accommodation. I still think the dream of accommodation is going to be better than reality. As long as the economy is okay and earnings are okay and margins are going up, stocks are good. The thing I watch every day is financial conditions. And if we start seeing them really tighten, then I think you're going to get a bigger, you know, shift more toward, higher quality cash flow.
Can't they tighten with a stock market correction of magnitude if rates continue to back up? It's not just a tightening of
spreads
credit.
Spreads need to widen. The whole kind of complex needs to get more risk, you know, risk off.
What about multiples? Do they get harder to justify in a higher for longer world or not?
You know, we did a whole bunch of work on the relationship between multiples and margins last week, because there's a lot of old school folks who would just say, look, like, the market's expensive. That's all I need to know. Eventually, we're going to mean revert down. And I think the problem with that is if you use history for the S&P, you're not really accounting for the fact that there's so many businesses that I think 36% of the S&P 500 market cap now is 60% gross margin or higher. It was like 15% 25 years ago. There's just less manufacturing, more software, more services and higher margin businesses, and higher margin businesses, you know, sort of asymmetrically get higher multiples. So I think you could be oscillating around this level, not back to 15 to 17 times that I think a lot of old school people have as the sort of anchor in their head.
You know? But I still think, and if I recall correctly, I remember, you know, Buffett on our air, you know, not that long ago, handful of years, justifying, you know, elevated multiples based on how low interest rates were. So how can multiples be justified at high levels with low
at all
rates,
multiple, at all.
And then now we're justifying the same multiple at much higher rates than where we were.
You know, ex post,
square that.
Ex post, I don't think you should have had as high multiples with low rates. I think the truth is extreme yields are probably because the world's a little riskier, and those should be lower multiple environments. And now we're kind of in a more healthy, normal 10-year band that we would have learned in school is sort of, you know, probably a higher multiple, more normal situation. I think it was just, you know, all the fiscal stimulus on top of the monetary policy that sort of confused people, you know, when rates were low. I think this is a more normal, healthy 10-year yield range to be in, and I think multiples can trade above 20 times as long as I dream margins are growing and earnings can grow next year over this year.
Okay, so you're very much, it sounds like,
risk reward's positive.
Keep your eye on the ball.
Yeah.
Fed is changing. Mm-hmm. It's already changed. It just hasn't made the move to express it.
Right.
But it will, and that's all that really matters at the end of the day, along with a good economy, earnings, and margins.
Yeah.
You can't have any one of those stories
if
get upset.
If the consumer starts really slowing, if, you know, financial conditions tightening is the number one thing that'll cause the market to sell off. Two, consumer really materially slows, and we start really hearing about, you know, kind of blow-ups in demand. And I've seen some kind of lower quality companies still take pretty good pricing. So I haven't really seen, like, ooh boy, you know, big revenue. You know, obviously if you get a Walmart telling you demand, you know, get a bellwether, we're not seeing that. And the last thing would be if China somehow gets incrementally worse, and when the companies report industrials and tech in the next couple of weeks, and they say, ooh, you know, order slow. But that's really hard for to get a read on.
I mean, it feels like China's getting incrementally better, if anything.
Yeah, you know, the data are mixed to slightly positive off of a low base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Fed chair made some comments today that are certainly being tossed around, and find out what they mean in the big picture. Senior economics reporter Steve Leisman has our download, if you will. The thing, Steve, that we need to think about most are what?
Scott, I think there's a change now, or a potential change in the Fed's base case about rate cuts being likely appropriate this year to perhaps not being likely appropriate this year. And if you'll bear with me for a second, I want to walk through what Powell said and what he didn't say and why I think that's the case. He said that restrictive policy needs to be needs further time to work. He went on to say recent data have not given us greater confidence to cut. It may take longer to get that confidence, and we can maintain restrictive rate as long as needed. That's what he said. Let's take a look for a second at what he didn't say, Scott, which was not in his remarks, nor were they in Vice Chair Jefferson's remarks today. He did not say, quoting the committee, if the economy evolves broadly as we expect, FOMC participancy is likely to be appropriate to begin lowering the policy rate at some point this year. Scott, he left that out of his comments. He left that out. Jefferson left that out of his comments. He had made those comments, Jefferson did, back in February. Powell said what he just said back as recently as April 3rd. Take a look at what's happened now to the probabilities. They have declined quite a bit now. In fact, I want to get you a fresh quote here. What we're looking at now is just a 18% probability of a rate cut in June, 44 for July, and 70 for September. Now, I guess one question for you, Scott, and perhaps for your guests there, has the market sniffed this out already? Take a look at the S&P from Thursday, Scott. We are off 2.7% from there. Now, part of that, of course, was a sell-off on perhaps a flight to safety with what was going to happen in Israel. But then take a look today. The market heard Powell's remarks, sold off, and I want to say Nick Timiraos from the Wall Street Journal hammered this angle on a potential discussion of whether the cut at all, and his story came out, but then the market rallied back. So I think it's a question, does the market know this? Does it need cuts? Certainly the challenge from higher rates, from a two-year approaching 5%, from a 10-year that's up as well, elevated as well, present a challenge for stocks for a longer period of time now than perhaps the average investor had thought of as recently as a month ago.
Now you raise good questions as usual. I'm just going to give it right to Adam Parker to let him answer that question. Has the market already figured this out, or is it still in the process, I think, maybe of figuring all this out?
Look, I remember years ago people saying, oh, man, if the 10-year gets a 2.75 or higher, the equity market's going to get killed. And then if it gets a 3 or higher, it's like game over for multiples. And, you know, at 4%, 10-year yield's the sound barrier, and the PE is going to crater. Like, it's one variable of a 19-variable problem we're all trying to solve. Right. If we know what's coming as accommodation, I still think it's bullish. I think the market can see through that. Long term, 50-year returns, 20-year returns, whatever it is, equities go up 12% per year. So is the 10-year yield at 5? Like, is that like a safe 5 with probably some vol and I got to hold it for then? I still think the equities look attractive on equities premium, personally. So I think I need a much higher 10-year than 5 for me to start really saying, you know what, man, take all of your money or a big chunk out of U.S. equities and hold that thing to duration and let's just see what happens with the United States of America. That seems really unattractive to me. I could see somebody saying on the 2-year at 5, I'll move a little bit out, but that's been the case for 2 years. But on 10, no way. Equities still look good to me.
Steve, I also thought it was interesting what the Fed chair didn't say today. And when he didn't talk about the possibility of hiking rates, as you say, if inflation persists, we can maintain the current rate. He talked about the current rate being high enough. Now, if he would have suggested, hey, you know, we're prepared to raise rates if inflation persists, the market wouldn't look like it does right now. So I think in part as the market processes all of this and makes its own adjustments, it's still hanging on the fact that it thinks the Fed's done, and it can deal with the fact that it has to wait longer than it originally could, because as the Fed chair himself underscored today, the economy's really strong.
Yeah, and Scott, I would say that shows you to be a keen and astute reader of Fed speak and Fed rhetoric. I think that's right. They're not there, but I could say ... yet. And by the way, both Powell and Jefferson seem very close in how they're talking about it. I can't remember the exact language that Jefferson used this morning, but it was very close to just that idea. Something about the current rate will be appropriate to lower interest rates. And somebody texted me at that time, does that mean to lower inflation? And somebody asked me, well, does that mean that cuts are off the table? If you think about what the prior base case was, there were these, what do you want to say? Optional rate cuts or soft landing rate cuts, you could call them, Scott. The ability of the Fed to cut interest rates while still en route to the 2% target, because they thought essentially that rates were higher than they thought they needed to be in order to make further progress. That analysis is going off the table slowly but surely. All these comments by the vice chair and the chair were preceded by very hawkish talk from members of the committee. And now we have the kind of exclamation point on that hawkish talk from both the vice chair and the chair here, where this idea of you can lower rates and still get inflation progress seems to be going by the wayside.
It's funny because I was wondering, Steve, going into today, whether it was going to be a big nothing burger, given that it was supposed to be about the Canadian economy. And here you go with a number of headlines that are relevant and pertinent to how investors are thinking about
this. Can I comment on that, which is, I think, another really good point, Scott, which is the Fed chair might have gotten away with just talking about Canada and the wonderful relations with our brethren to the north. He did take some time out to talk about some of the great actors and musicians who come from Canada and said, let's import more of those. So there was a moment. He could have done that, Scott. But instead, on the first question, he decided to talk specifically and pointedly about the recent inflation disappointments that there have been, how it has undermined the confidence and the confidence in the confidence, in the sense that we now don't have the confidence. We're going to have the confidence very soon. Just a big asterisk here, Scott. All of this can change with a couple, one, two, three, perhaps, good inflation reports. And there are still those out there on the street who have that forecast built into their base case. I don't know where the Fed chair or the Fed in general has it. They had a 2.6% inflation as a median for the committee for this year on the core PCE. Powell gave us a little bit of a heads up on what's coming at the end of this month with the core PCE, saying it's going to be 2.8. It's really not going to change. So that's 3 months in a row you're not getting progress, and that has undermined their confidence in getting the confidence to cut.
True. but it's better than higher and moving in the opposite direction on PCE as well. So I get where you're going with that. Steve, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
I appreciate it as always. Our senior economics reporter, Steve Leisman. Let's bring in Keith Lerner now of Truist Wealth into the conversation, because you think that it's good to see you, by the way, that, okay, the pullback may have more to go, but you got your eye on the ball and say that the trend is still intact. Is that correct?
That's right. Great to be with you and Adam Parker as well. That's, you know, our view coming into this quarter was that the market was a bit stretched. Right? We had five straight months up. We had a 10% first quarter, and we were likely to see some type of pullback. Now, if you think about it, when we have 10% first quarters, you look the rest of the year, you've been up 10 out of 11 times by the end of the year. But the minimum pullback you see at some point is 4%. And the average is deeper than that. So listen, I think the market got stretched. We had expectations that moved up, and we've seen some volatility in interest rates and inflation. And we're having a bit of a reset. That reset likely has a bit longer to go in time and price. But as you all discussed before, the economy is still relatively resilient. Every week we see forward earning estimates make a new high as well. And also everyone's kind of searching, what is that 10-year yield that really breaks this market? Before the financial crisis, the average 10-year since 1950 was about 6%. The average cash rate was about 5%. And the equity market, as Adam alluded to earlier, grew about 11 or 12%. So I think rates moving up at a fast pace really caps the upside and may provide some, you know, some choppiness. But credit markets are really well behaved. So that's telling you that the economy is still okay as well. So I think this likely goes on longer. But ultimately, I think the primary trend is up. And as the market pulls back, we would be leaning into that. And I think the downside is probably limited in this 5 to 10% range for the market.
Right, Adam. I mean, I do think you've got to be careful about going back and looking at historical references and saying, well, the market has been fine for however many decades with a 10-year at whatever rate you want to pick, because this time is different. You're going from 0 to 5% in a reasonably short period of time. Let's also not forget that we had reset our expectations to where rates were going to be, to at least in part justify where the market was and the kind of multiple that you're paying based on where you thought rates were going. So you can't have your cake and eat it too.
I think he's spot on. Keith's spot on. It's change and the pace of change, not just the level, right? Obviously, if we back up and the VIX backs up, that's clearly all a financial condition tightening situation. If it sort of slowly backs up because the economy is decent, then I think that market can handle that, and earnings and multiples, the market will be higher. So I think he's spot on. It's the pace at which it backs up that I think could spook people.
Well, of course, when the 10-year got down to 4 and briefly dipped below, you know, bulls at that time didn't have 5 on their bingo card, okay? We had accepted the fact that, all right, economy's good, earnings are going to be good enough, and hey, the Fed tells us they're going to cut, and they're pricing in 7 cuts. Now we're not pricing in 7, we're pricing in 3. Now we're not pricing in 3, we're pricing in 2. Now we're going to be lucky to get any.
I'm sitting here listening to, you know, the economists, all you're reading. I'm just trying to figure out if they're all, like, just terrible at what they do, right? Like, they're just bad. Or if it's just unknowable and unforecastable. It's one or the other. All of them are just brutally wrong in both directions for 20 years on the Fed. I mean, honestly, like I went after Morgan Stanley. We call for the rates to back up every single year for 8 years in a row. I mean, so it's obviously hard to do. These are smart people. So how can I position a portfolio based on stuff that's always wrong? I can't. I have to take a step back and say, wait a minute. Is the Fed, they ran below 2% for a decade. They convinced us they'd get it back up to 2. Equities work. We're going to run above 2 for a decade. If they convince us it's on the way to 2 with some fits and starts, maybe it can be good. That's what you need to believe to be bullish. If you think it gets out of that comfort band and they can't control it, then I think you get more nervous and you get a risk-off trade. It's hard for me to position for that now based on what I see at the stock level. But I'm certainly not going to listen to some economist at some firm tell me that there's 7 cuts and then 4 and then 2. They have no idea.
Well, which is why, Keith, some say, given all the noise, if you want to characterize all of it as noise, stay large. Stay with large U.S. stocks, big market cap U.S. stocks is what I'm trying to say, whether it is mega cap tech or otherwise.
Yeah, we're still in that camp. The other point I'll just make real quickly, too. I mean, today, the IMF upgraded their U.S. economic forecast from 2.1 to 2.7%. In the beginning of the year, the average economist was around 1%. So we're more than doubled that already, and that should support earnings. But to your point, we are seeing some bifurcation in the market. As the higher for longer with interest rates happen, we're seeing real estate at a 20-year low relative to the market. That's a sector we've been underweight. We're still underweight. You're seeing small caps, which on some metrics look really cheap, but they're really interest rate sensitive, also at the lowest relative price of the S&P since COVID. So we would stick with large caps. I think this consolidation that we've seen, or this more kind of a sideways relative performance for tech, was a positive. And I think we're likely to see more tech reassert that leadership because they have earnings momentum that's positive. They have these big balance sheets. They don't need financing from the debt markets. They also, by the way, have a lot of cash, or they're earning more cash or interest on that cash as well. So we still think that's a place to be, even during this more volatile period that we're seeing right now.
Which is why you've seen quickly, Adam, buying on the dips of big caps.
Yeah, tech. I mean, I totally agree with that statement that you need access to the biggest 20 U.S. equities and their 15% per year annual net income growth, and you can't get that through any bonds. But what he said is also interesting, which is, I'm paraphrasing and making what he, not only were the economists wrong on rates, they were wrong on the GDP also.
Well, sure.
So it's tied together, but
it's been difficult. The Fed chair himself.
Right.
They were wrong on a lot of this.
So if you're an equity guy, right. If you're
in terms of where growth was going to be, what they thought they had to do to get inflation down, whether they had to choke off demand. Now it's not so much because, as Powell said today, this type of inflation was caused by something different than what you would.
You know, there's like a no drinking in January type of thing, or no shaving.
Dry January.
Let's do like a no Fed May. Let's just forget what they say and focus on something that matters, that's actually forecasted.
All right, I don't know if I can promise you that. I'm not going to shake on it.
All right.
All bets might be off. Keith, I appreciate your time very much. Thank you. Adam Parker, thanks to you as well. Seema Modi has a look at the biggest names moving into the close. Hi, Seema.
Hey, Scott. Both in the healthcare space, starting with United Health, surging today on heavy volume and lifting the Dow following strong earnings that beat expectations. The healthcare company also reaffirmed its full-year guidance despite that February cyber attack on the Change healthcare billing system. You'll see shares are up 5.7%. Humana and Elevance up as well at this hour. Let's also take a look at Johnson & Johnson, which is moving in the opposite direction, sliding to a new 52-week low. The drug maker posted a solid Q1 earnings beat, but revenues came in light. The company saw strength in cardiovascular device sales, but its blockbuster psoriasis drug, Stelara, missing expectations. We're looking at the stock down nearly 2% at this hour, Scott.
All right, Seema, I appreciate that. See you shortly. Seema Modi, we're just getting started here. Up next, no signs of slowing. That's what Patient Capital Samantha McLemore says about this bull market, why she is still staying so positive amid some uncertainty, where she's finding opportunity within stocks right now. She joins me next. We're live at the New York Stock Exchange. You're watching Closing Bell on CNBC.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
We're back with stocks trying to snap their recent downtrend today. Rising yields and the threat of higher for longer rates weighing on investor sentiment yet again. Our next guest, though, says the bull market is showing no signs of breaking down. Joining us now, Patient Capital founder and CIO Samantha McLemore. It's nice to see you.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Wow. So you're still pretty bullish, undeterred by this recent volatility, the backup in rates and everything else. Tell me why.
Well, we think this is a normal, natural pullback. We had a huge move in the market, almost 30% upside in the S&P from the lows in October. So that's a huge move. And it was the fourth longest period with the market staying above the 50-day. So strong, prolonged. And I think, you know, the S&P is now 4% off its highs. That is a very measured pullback, especially when you think about interest rates going from the high threes to almost 4.7% this year. Crude moving up significantly to the mid-80s from the high 60s. Geopolitics, Fed rate cut concerns. Given all of that, I think most people would have estimated that the market would have had a more significant pullback. So I think that the market shows, a very measured response.
Sure, but I mean, if what got you here, at least in part, you know, was the expectation that rates were going to do just something different than what they're doing now, if that's changed, which it seems to have changed, doesn't the outlook need to change at least somewhat in the near term? Not talking the big picture or where we think the overall trend is going, but in the near term here.
Well, I would say that must not have been what got us here, because coming into the year, people estimated we'd have 6 rate cuts this year. Now, people are estimating less than 2 by December, and the market has been okay. So I think what this rally and a continued bull market depends on is the economy remaining strong, inflation remaining contained, employment remaining steady. So far, you know, we see all of that.
So we don't need cuts at all this year?
It depends. We'll see. I think it depends on what the economy does. If the economy slows, then we might need rate cuts. I think what the market fears is that we will stay restrictive too long and that will, you know, lead to a recession. So I think as long as that doesn't happen, no one really knows what the neutral rate is and where that, how high that interest rate can stay. But that's something that we're watching quite closely. And I think given what we're seeing, given what we saw for retail sales, employment, the economy remains quite strong.
So what should I do? What are you guys doing within the market to express the view?
Well, we love buying beaten up names on pullbacks, where we think the intrinsic value of businesses is much higher than where a name's trading in the market. So, you know, there are a number of names like that we're adding to in this market. One example of that is Kosmos Energy, which is, a smaller, earlier stage E&P company. It's one of the few energy names that we can find that we think has significant upside, even if a normalized crude price is at 65 rather than 85. So the stock's trading at $6 a share now, and we think it's worth 12 to 14 and even higher than that if prices stay here.
Beyond sort of idiosyncratic stories like a Kosmos, for example, do you believe in the broadening story continuing well beyond mega cap tech? I ask you the question because it sounds like you would, given your overall view of the market.
Well, we certainly saw broadening out of the market late last year and early this year. And so that's what we've seen. And last year, a lot of the economically sensitive names, in my opinion, were pricing in recession. So as the odds of a recession have come down and people have gotten more comfortable with economic growth, we've certainly seen that broaden out. Now, it still looks like large cap growth are the market leaders. They continue to lead both on the upside and the downside. They don't have as much upside to intrinsic value as other names that we find, but we have a balanced portfolio, you know, across the different types of mispriced securities.
Yeah. I mean, you added NVIDIA around 550 or so in the first quarter. It's obviously run a lot. You do have some people talking about bubble-like qualities out of some of those names, trying to justify what their, you know, are their multiples really worth what they've expanded to? I know that NVIDIA's multiple has come in as the earnings expectation has gone up, but how would you assess that broad picture of the mega caps in general?
Yeah, so we just looked at the Mag 7 because there's a lot of talk about how narrow the market's been, how they make up most of the returns, whether it's bubble-like. I think we can confidently say it is not at all on the level of the tech bubble. I think tech peaked at 55 times then, and these names are 35 times, and tech is 35 times. And these are some of the best companies that have ever existed in the history of the world, these Mag 7. If you look over the past decade, they've, you know, grown revenues 24% a year, free cash flow per share over 40% a year. They've doubled their returns on capital. They have huge free cash flow margins, great balance sheets, and they're still growing quite strongly. So during that time, if you exclude Tesla, which we do think is overpriced for what the current business is, the multiple on the other six went from 23 times to 25 times. So the premium to the market actually shrank from a 50% premium to a 25% premium. So I think it's really hard to argue that those names are significantly overpriced in aggregate.
Samantha, I appreciate it as always. Thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. Up next, shares of Bank of America slipping post-earnings. That stock down about 3% today. We hear from Bank of America Chairman and CEO Brian Moynihan next. His first take on the quarter. What's next for the bank? We're back after this.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
All right, welcome back. Shares of Bank of America moving lower today. The company reporting an 18% drop in first quarter profit, the latest big lender to feel the squeeze of higher interest rates. Earnings, however, did top expectations. Sarah Eisen joins us now with a first on CNBC interview with the chairman and CEO of Bank of America, Brian Moynihan. Sarah?
Scott, thank you. Brian, thank you for joining us. I first just have to ask if you're surprised by the market reaction, because the numbers mostly were better than expected with a big pop in trading as well.
Well, we had a great quarter here at Bank of America, exceeding expectations. And, well, one day's market, as I always tell myself, you can feel good or bad on that day. But the job for us is to drive the things we control and continue to produce for the shareholders. We've got 14% return on tangible common equity this quarter. And, you know, if people are selling the stock, we'll be buying it back. And at lower prices today than we thought we'd be buying it back. But let's wait till tomorrow and see what happens.
All right. That's an expression of confidence. You did reiterate guidance, and the market, I guess, had higher hopes. We saw this with Wells and J.P. Morgan as well, that higher for longer would be better for net interest income outlook and profitability. So what are you expecting on that front?
Well, we basically told people that for the first quarter of 24, we had told them at the time we did earnings for the fourth quarter last year, that we would actually be down a little bit linked quarter. We actually turned out to be up linked quarter, up $100 million, which was $300 million, $250, $300 million to the upside. We then said you can kind of lock that in. So the second quarter for us always comes down a little bit from the first quarter. Mm-hmm. We said you can lock that in and it'll grow from then on out, which is a different path than other people have. And that's because of the power of our deposit base. Our deposits are growing. Our loan growth is still muted because the economy is still adjusting to all the things that your colleagues have been talking about all day. And so we saw loan growth year over year, but linked quarter loans were down a little bit due to the seasonality of credit cards. Credit quality is still good. So we feel good about what we're doing. But the key on NII is that we actually had more than we thought we were going to have. We expect to have more than we thought we were going to have next quarter, and it grows from there and, frankly, starts to get to the point where it's net growth year over year for the company.
So what about the consumer? Because you have some pretty good visibility into people's deposits and their credit card spending. Is it doing better? Is it doing worse? Is it the same?
Well, if you look in the spending data for our consumers, you have to put a little bit in historical context. So at Bank of America, we have the honor of serving 60 million U.S. consumers, and we see what goes in and out of their accounts on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And if you think about, if we were sitting here last year or a year and a half ago, we were talking about consumer spending being very strong. A lot of people were saying, well, the consumer is going to run out of money. Didn't happen. The consumer was going to overleverage. Did not happen. The consumer wage growth was not going to keep up inflation. It didn't happen back then. But what did happen, as you move forward from that standpoint, is the consumer has slowed down their spending. So they went from a 10% year-over-year growth early last year to 5% last fall, and now they're running about 5%, a little less than that in March, April a little stronger. And what that means, that growth and movement of money across $4.5 trillion on an annual basis out of the Bank of America accounts is consistent where we were in 17, 18, 19 when the Fed had raised rates, lower inflation, 2%-ish type growth economy. So you're seeing the consumer hang in there and continue to spend, but spend at a level that's more consistent with a more trend type of economy. And we'll see how it play out over the sense of the next quarter.
What about what Chair Powell just said on inflation this afternoon? He said recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence that inflation is coming under control. Based on everything you see from how consumers are dealing and also how businesses are passing it on, how do you assess inflation and the path down to 2%?
Well, if you look at our research team, which is the best in the world, what they've done is just constantly pushed out the effects of the Fed tightening before that and other things. So originally, 18 months ago, they had a recession plan for the last part of last year, early part of this year. Then they pushed it out into the early part of this year. Then they said it's not a recession, it's soft landing. And now they say it's basically continued with trend economy, economic growth. So you had a 4% plus growth rate in the third quarter, 3% in the fourth quarter last year. And now they're saying it's going to be 2.5% this quarter. That reflects just the ongoing attributes of, A, the consumer being solid, businesses making money, unemployment staying low. They have unemployment not getting up to above 4% until the end of 25. Originally had it this year. All that is just sort of pushing out the impacts, because I think the debate's going on, and you're talking about it every day, and we're Fed watching way too much right now. The reality is that the issue is that the Fed has put a huge constraint on economic growth due to the massive stimulus and response to the crisis and the lowering of rates and the things that went on. It is still having an effect. You've seen the economy slow down even from third quarter last year to fourth quarter, but it's taking longer than they think. And those experts say it takes about 4 years to wind out of inflation. And so while the Fed has a plenipotent power to make the decision, they don't have the power to decide what the facts are. And so at the end of the day, the facts are going along based on a solid economy, and not moving as fast as some people might have thought. And that is the day-to-day impact on 3 cuts, 4 cuts, 7 cuts, 2 cuts. So, at the end of the day, our company will operate well in any environment.
When do loans pick up again? When are we going to start to see growth there?
Oh, so the interesting part of that is if you sort it out by the businesses, there are a couple things going on. One, in the high-end global corporate investment banking business, we had a great quarter for investment banking fees, and part of that is debt capital markets. So people are going into market and financing and paying off either temporary credit for an acquisition or paying off and refinancing bank loans into the market because they're cheaper and have longer duration to them. So that's the places we did not get loan growth in the quarter, really around there. We had a typical seasonal decline in credit card, but that's usually planned for. And all the other areas grew slightly. So the middle market business grew a little bit. The business banking, which is a small business, grew a bit. And small business itself grew. And so what we're seeing is a steadying of the draw rates and lines of credit sort of flattening back out. It was declining, and now it's sort of leveled off. But we're not seeing robust loan demand for two reasons. One is it's expensive. One of your colleagues was talking about, you went from 25 basis points to 5.25 to 5.5 on a Fed funds rate and add the margin to that. Yeah, that's a 20-fold increase in the interest cost base. And so that's had the impact of saying, I'm not going to borrow if I really am convinced there's an opportunity. And so what you're seeing is companies being careful in their borrowing, careful in their employment levels. They're not laying off as much people, but they're not hiring as much people. So labor's more, you can find labor more easily than you could before. And they're just being generally a little more conservative because they're listening to all the stuff that you've been talking about all day. And I think, but in the end of the day, we're seeing some loan, year over year, we're up 1% in loan growth. That's, that's fine. Fine, but we expect to see more. If the economy running this strong, you'd expect to see more, but I think it has to do with general borrowing conditions still muted due to, even on home loans, obviously higher mortgage rates slow down the borrowing process there.
Yeah, it's the plus minus of high rates. Thank you very much, Brian, for all the color. Really helpful as we look at the stock come off the lows. Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America. Scott, back over to you.
All right, Sarah, thanks so much. Up next, tracking the biggest movers into the close. Seema Modi standing by with that. Seema.
Scott, electric vehicle investors got some rare good news this morning when one company received an upgrade. And there's a social media stock that continues its decline. We got more on the closing bell movers right after this.
Well, less than 15 from the closing bell. Back to Seema Modi now for a look at the stock she's watching. Seema.
Hey, Scott. Rivian is breaking a four-day losing streak after UBS upgraded the stock from sell to neutral, citing the company's R2 orders as a potential catalyst. This is the company's lower-priced car that is anticipated to hit the market on 2026. Stock hitting a 52-week low, but then it got that upgrade. Shares rebounded, now up nearly 5% at this hour. Worth noting that short interest has been rising in the stock. Take a look at Trump Media, continuing to fall after the company announced its Truth Social app is moving to launch a live TV streaming platform seen by the market as a cost-intensive business. And it follows a filing that showed the company may sell more stock. We're seeing shares in the market cap decreasing by more than $5 billion since it began trading as a public company at the end of March. Right now, down 13%. Scott?
All right, Seema, I appreciate that. Thank you. Seema Modi. Still ahead, United Airlines reporting at the top of the hour. Stocks had a volatile year thus far. We will tell you all the key metrics to look out for when closing bell comes right back. Coming up next, United Airlines and Interactive Brokers among the big names reporting in overtime. We'll tell you what to watch for when those numbers hit the tape when we take you inside the market zone. We're now in the closing bell market zone. CNBC senior markets commentator Mike Santoli here to break down the crucial. LeBeau on United Airlines, Kate Rooney on Interactive Brokers. Mike, I'll go to you. Your takeaway from a day, rates up yet again, and nice update from the Fed chair, I think, on where we stand.
Rates up yet again. Powell's comments were a decent test of kind of what we've already more or less absorbed about the current environment. Him saying that, maybe we're not going to have the circumstances to do any cutting or at least not much. The market says, what do you think we've been doing here for the last week?
Yeah, exactly.
We've been pricing that out. We're up 35 basis points in 10-year yield in 6 days. So I think that was a decent test, though, to say that's not going to jar us. And I'm with everybody who says, hey, we can live with this if the economy's good, if earnings comes through. There's nothing inherently dangerous about 4.7% 10-year treasury yields in a nominal growth economy of like 5 to 6%. But it does change how you weight the probabilities. It changes how you weight the probabilities that the economy either won't be able to fully handle it, or we get the kind of real estate world and housing looks like it takes more on the chin. And all of a sudden, you're talking about the feedback loop of those tighter financial conditions. And by the way, when the market does what it's been doing, that is tightening financial
That's
conditions.
Right.
It's not like somebody decrees, hey, tighten financial conditions, and then the market reacts. Stocks down. Yields up, volatility up, even credit spreads up a little bit, and dollar up, that's all tightening financial conditions. So that somehow kind of does a little bit of the work of restraining the economy and who knows, maybe getting inflation lower.
Phil LeBeau, United Airlines, I guess will tell us if we have tightening booking conditions.
Yes, and that's going to be one of the main things we're looking for, Scott. Three things will stand out in this earnings report for United for the first quarter. First of all, what did it see in terms of demand in the first quarter? Remember last week, Delta saw an acceleration, especially with corporate demand in the second half of the first quarter. Did United see the same thing? So what's the strength of demand, if you will? Fleet plans, we know what's going on with Boeing building fewer 737 MAXs. That clearly has to impact United. And then we know that they were in the market for an Airbus replacement order, if you will, because they won't be taking delivery of the MAX 10s. Do they announce one? Don't forget, United's expected to report a loss of 57 cents a share, so the street's not expecting a profit here. And remember, tomorrow morning, after the numbers this afternoon, we will be talking with United CEO Scott Kirby. Lots to discuss here beyond the numbers in terms of fleet plans, Boeing, Airbus. You don't want to miss that interview on Squawk Box.
Yeah, we won't miss it, Phil. Look forward to it. Thanks so much. That's Phil LeBeau, Interactive Brokers, by the way, reporting as well. Kate Rooney.
Hey, yeah, Scott. So the momentum for Interactive Brokers that it's seen this year, it's expected to continue when we get that report out after the bell. Account growth is a key thing to watch. That's expected to accelerate. Watch for trading activity. That's going to be reflected through something called DARTs, Daily Active Revenue Trades. Net interest income is going to be key as well. Amid this rate environment, margin lending, also a big one. Piper Sandler upping its price target this week for Interactive, saying any negative impact you might see from rate cuts that it could have on IBKR's revenues, that has been overshadowed by a number of positives. They call out 70%+ operating margins. They do expect account growth of about 20 to 25% with what they call a healthy amount of excess capital. Citi, meanwhile, calling out company's strong organic growth and momentum potential, says it's well positioned from the current rate environment with offsets in a lower rate environment. So saying it can kind of operate in both. You got founder and chairman Thomas Peterffy coming up on Overtime. Always a great interview, Scott.
All right, look forward to that as well. Kate, thank you. Kate Rooney. All right, Mike, I'll turn back to you with about a minute left. I guess, look, now that Powell has spoken, maybe we can just sort of move away from that narrative for a little while and get real focused on earnings?
Ideally, I think that's what a lot of investors would prefer. I do think the market has some business to take care of just in terms of the real tactical stuff, right? What does it mean that at the highs, when we ramped 10% in the first quarter of this year, you go up 28% off the October low, everybody said, we got a 3 to 5% pullback in our future just because they happen. We're down 4%. It always is accompanied by a bunch of headlines or narratives that say, hey, maybe this could be more, maybe it could be tougher. So far, nothing really telling you that this is particularly nasty at this level, but I still do think there's some churn ahead of us. We got options expiration coming up. So we'll see if we can get that focus on the fundamentals.
Yeah, the market behaving pretty well on a day you get Jefferson and Powell.
There's
the bell. So we'll go out with a loss on the S&P. We'll pick it up tomorrow. I look forward to being with you then. Into overtime with Morgan and John.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.